Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Anytime, you know, one of my best friends is able to go out there and perform the way he performs, it definitely motivated. You know, I was looking forward to game one after watching him in game six, you know, the way he was able to close that game out. And obviously he just, you know, they all gritted last night, you know, not only, you know, Miami, but Toronto. They was just it was a slugfest watching that game, and they was able to pull out as well. So, but anytime I'm able to watch, you know, my guys do work, it's definitely motivating for sure.
Dragic met by Joseph. Dragic throws it up. Oh, it's good and a foul. Goran Dragic, a chance at a four-point play. Wade makes his move on Joseph. Five to shoot. Wade to the corner. Dragic, a three ball for Dragic. And Miami leads by five. They need a three to tie. Lowry, half-court heave. A prayer at the buzzer. Oh, Kyle Lowry, he hits.
Does Kyle Lowry have another one in him?
8 seconds. Nearly stolen. DeRozan loses the ball. Guess who? Dwayne Wade streaks in. Doesn't dunk it cleanly, but it goes down. And that will be the knockout punch for Miami.
It's the Goran Dragic that every basketball fan came to know, to make some outside shots because of how the defense plays. He's just been very aggressive. To be successful in this playoffs the way we want to be, we need that. Well, I think as a team, we didn't play a great game. We had a lot of turnovers early that led to, you know, them getting transition buckets, but we're only down two, you know, going into the break. So we can play better.
Here's the 2-2. Swinging a high fly ball, center field, fairly deep. Going back, goes. He got a late break. It's over his head all the way to the wall. That's going to score two. Kipnis is in. Lindor right behind him. No throw. Two out, two run double from Mike Napoli. He got another fastball, and he didn't miss it. 2-0 Indian. High fly ball, left field. This one's deep. This one's got a chance. Ball is gone, a home run. Ian Kinsler with number five carries the big wall and left. The Tigers are on the board, now trailing 4-2. 3-1, swinging a fly ball right field, way back in right, and gone. Wow. Francisco Lindor with a no-doubter to right, his second of the year. It's a three-run shot. It's a shot to the gut after the Tigers had just scored two. Indians lead it 7-2. The 0-2. Curveball, strike three, got him.
Wow, that was a beauty.
Rough night for Justin Verlander. The Indians' offense have been quiet for a week. Again, they find a way to beat up on Tigers pitching for the third time in four meetings this year. The Indians have won all four meetings.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader, and we are so glad you have joined us today right here for a couple of hours of scintillating sports discussion and dialogue, and if necessary, even some debate. Jim Cushman is here now, but he'll be leaving soon. And that, oh, wow. Now, is that applause because he's here or because he's leaving soon? Is it because
but
he's
I'm
here?
I'm confused.
So you're cheering because he's leaving soon.
That's the fact, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure we understood all of that. There you go. What'd you say, Jim?
No, yeah, even I was confused on that one. Are you wanting to get rid of me?
You're confused on everything.
Yeah,
that's why they're
okay,
cheering that
true.
You're going to be leaving. See? Every time I say it. Our studio audience is very vocal and rabid from time to time, just depending on what it is that we're talking about.
They have been known for that, yes.
Yes, indeed. All right, welcome to the extravaganza. Boy, you know, you heard the announcer, for the third time in four games this year, the Indians have beat up on Tigers starting pitching. Yeah, that is true, and for the fourth straight time, the Indians have beaten up on Justin Verlander. There was a time when they could not beat Justin Verlander.
Couldn't touch him.
could not touch him in the least. And now it's just the other way around. They can't lose to him. They can't not knock him around. And it's not just, you know, lightly. They just beat him up. And, you know, it's funny because I was wondering yesterday, Jim, you heard the conversation as we had Anthony Fenech on.
Yes.
To talk about Tigers baseball. As he, of course, writes for the Free Press and covers the Tigers. Today, we'll go to the other side, go to the other dugout, and talk to Zach Meisel from Cleveland about the Indians and their side of things against the Tigers. But yesterday, we were talking about Justin Verlander, and I asked Fenech, if you recall, you know, what's going on with Justin. His ERA is kind of unwieldy right now, unsightly, and he said that's misleading because most of that is from one bad outing against Pittsburgh. Well, he replicated that outing last night against the Indians. And they pounded him and knocked him around a bit. And I will again ask, what's going on? Because the Tigers, quite frankly, it's not just Verlander. It's their starting pitching as a whole. Pelfrey, Sanchez, they've all, you know, just kind of been very inconsistent, to say the least. In fact, another Free Press writer, Tom Zahari, did the numbers here. And Tigers pitching, Tigers starters, have combined for a 4.43 ERA, which is just a little below average, not horrid. But take out Jordan Zimmermann, who's been the only consistent starting pitcher, and Tiger starters have an ERA of 5.75. So take out Zimmermann, and everybody else has been, quite frankly, awful. So, and the most frustrating, of course, is Verlander, who, you know, again, just is getting banged around by teams that he used to own, including the Indians. And last night, you know, I mean, talk about a great time for that to happen for Cleveland, as their offense have been struggling mightily for the last week. They lost 5 out of 6 of their last 6 games, all 1-run games, and really couldn't get the bats out of the slumber. And, you know, here comes Justin Verlander at a time when you think Verlander might be able to own that team again that is struggling, and it's the other way around.
Yeah,
Indians feasted.
You know, it's interesting, Bob. I'm from an Indians v. Tigers, you know, specific here. I keep thinking I'm in a baseball bizarre world. Not only, you know, you mentioned it, they used to beat up, or they're beating up on Verlander now. That never used to be the case. And the other side, as a team, the Indians have struggled so very mightily, as we all know, these last couple seasons against the Tigers. And in some respects here in the early goings of 2016, yeah, it's still May. You know, you don't count standings until about Memorial Day. It almost feels like the Tigers are the only team they can beat.
Yeah.
In those 5 of 6 that you mentioned that they lost, 2 of the 3 were to the Minnesota Twins, who have gotten off to a horrid start because their hitting has actually been worse than the Indians and kind of putting them back where they one would think they should be. And then you get swept over the weekend by the Phillies, who, despite being very hot right now, were universally thought of as one of the worst teams in the National League coming into this season. It's almost like that right now the Indians are losing to everybody but the Tigers. So I feel like I'm in some kind of bizarro baseball world right now.
Yeah, it is trippy. And if you think about it this way, too, or another way, and I'm going to get back to those Verlander stats in a moment, but you can think about this in another way, too. The Indians are, what, 11-12 now?
11-12.
11-12, 4 of their 11 victories, so roughly one-third of their victories, actually more than one-third of their victories have come against the Tigers. So think about it, and that is a very bizarre thing. It is a bizarre world, if you will.
Just coming from where these two teams have been against each other the last couple of years, where the Tigers have just utterly dominated the Indians.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, they've been the one team that the Indians just could not. I mean, you know, we're talking, when we talk about dominance, they're playing each other 19 times a year, and you know, the Tigers are winning like 14 or 15 of them.
Right.
You know, it's like 14. I mean, it was that bad. But last night, Verlander had another start. Remember, we talked yesterday about his worst start when we talked to Fenech about being against the Pirates back, I want to say his second start of the season. And he gave up 7 earned runs in about 4 or 5 innings, and it really jacked up his ERA. And he said he's been much better than that. Well, guess what? Last night he gave up 7 earned runs in 5 innings.
Yep.
To the Indians, of all teams, a team that can't really, you know, wasn't really swinging the bats well at all. And he goes 5, gives up 8 hits, 7 runs, all earned. 3 walks, strikes out only 2, throws 97 pitches in those 5, and suddenly the ERA is up at 6.49. So something's wrong. And I don't know what it is. I'm not an expert. And by the way, we spent a lot of time praising Justin Verlander yesterday for his lot in life as he just got
the
engaged.
The poor fella.
As he just got engaged to Kate Upton. But so we're not picking on the guy, obviously. We praised him yesterday and all the great stuff he's got going on. But, boy, he's not himself. And we all know what happened after he came back from his injury a year and a half ago. His velocity was not the same.
Right.
He started last. When did he make his first start last year?
Oh gosh,
it was like in May, wasn't it?
It might have even been June, actually. Let me triple check.
Something like that. But at any rate, the velocity wasn't the same, and people said, well, if he doesn't have that velocity, does he have the command to move the ball around on the plate and hit his spots to make up for the lack of velocity, that he had, which was so dominant when he was. When he was the Cy Young Award winner and the league MVP.
His first start was June 13th of a year ago.
There you go.
Incidentally, against the Indians. 5 innings, 2 runs, 3 hits.
How about that? And his issues come back once again, and again, going back to the free press now, to Tom Zahari, to his fastball's effectiveness. He has always been, writes Tom, a fastball first pitcher and struggles mightily when he does not have control of it. Entering Tuesday, Fangraphs rated his fastball as his worst pitch. Every season in which his fastball has a negative value, he's had an ERA of 4.54 or worse. So it's really kind of crazy. And, and again, it's Verlander is going to get first critique, if you will, or be criticized the most because of who he is, because of his record, because of his history as the best pitcher in baseball,
right,
and the MVP and all that stuff. But he isn't the only one struggling. It's just that he's expected to be so much better than everybody else, obviously.
Especially when, in theory, he was fully healthy this year as opposed
right.
to last year.
Supposed to be fully healthy to start the season. Exactly right. But he's not the only one.
No.
And tonight it's going to be Corey Kluber for the Indians. And who's going? Is it Sanchez tonight?
It's Anibal Sanchez, who's one of the guys struggling that I expected to be better. He's got a 6.08 ERA after his handful of starts to begin the year. And he had a little injury issues of his own that he was dealing with. That's part of the reason his numbers were a lot higher than normal last year. But now they're still way up there.
And, he hasn't gotten through the sixth inning of a start
exactly.
this year.
Exactly. And what you had said about the Tigers staff made me re-look it up. Yeah, outside of Jordan Zimmermann, 5-0, 0.55 ERA, you got Verlander at 6.49, Sanchez at 6.08, Mike Pelfrey, who was halfway decent as a Twin last year, figured they were bringing him in to be that veteran innings eater. He's been awful, 5.68. And then now they're messing around with the fifth starter spot because Shane Green, who had a 6.28 ERA, is on the shelf.
Yeah, so it's a rough time right now. It's interesting because they came in yesterday red hot, 5 in a row, and 8 out of 10, I think, after struggling and losing 5 or 4 in a row.
Of which 3 of those were to the Indians in that sweep. Yeah, the Indians have been cold as ice, and the Tigers have been red hot since that sweep, which was, it's a Wednesday now, so a week and a half ago.
Yeah. So just kind of an interesting turn of events there with respect to the Indians and the Tigers, or the Tigers at the Indians. Game 2 of that 3-game set is tonight. Coming up at 4:10 or so this afternoon, we'll talk more with Zach Meisel and get the Indians' perspective. We did Tigerstown yesterday with Anthony Fenech, so we'll kind of hear what Meisel has to say about the Indians in that matchup a little bit later on.
And by the way, that game, of course, as we do with all Tigers games over on Talk Radio 1470, 5:45 pregame, because they're starting these games in Cleveland at 6. And by the way, I meant to ask you this, Bob. Do you like that? Starting the hour earlier on these earlier in the season weeknight games, usually their 7 o'clock starts are 6. Do you like those?
I do, for one reason. And the main reason is because it could help and should help with attendance. You start a game at 6 o'clock or 6:05 or 6:10 instead of 7:10, you're going to have a lot more people in downtown ballparks like they have in Cleveland, like they have in Detroit. You're going to have a lot more people who might think, you know what, rather than going home, let's go over to the yard. Let's go watch a game. It can help with attendance. Secondly, for school purposes, a lot of parents would like to take their kids to on a weeknight like this. They can't, because if the game starts at 7:10, depending on the flow of the game, they're not getting out of there 10:30 at night and getting home after 11, and parents just don't want their kids to be up that late on school nights. Starting it a little bit earlier could make more people come, and this might not mean a lot to Tigers fans, where attendance isn't really an issue as much, and the revenue because you know, Mike Ilitch is so ready and willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on his payroll. But in a place like Cleveland, where those Indians, the Indians fans, literally make the difference between being able to sign players and not being able to, because they don't have as much money and they don't have the ability to put a $200 million payroll or $175 million payroll on the field. They can spend what they make. And when they don't make money, or excuse me, when they don't draw people through those turnstiles and spending money in that building, they just don't have the revenue to sign guys. So it's always an issue. I know it has been for years that I did talk in Cleveland. I did post-game shows there, and we talk about the ridiculous 11,000 at the yard tonight for a team that's only three games out of first place, that sort of thing. Maybe moving it up to 610 gets more families there, gets more workers downtown there. So I kind of like it for that reason.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking, especially for the reason regarding not, you know, the kids and stuff, especially while school's still on. Yeah, because you're bumping everything an hour. You figure an average game is about 3 hours, so you're ending at 9:15, 9:30 on an average game that starts at 6:10, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially and by the way, we've all complained for seemingly generations now, because it's more than just mine, of, oh, they want all these games to start, you know, so late for TV purposes. Incidentally, throwing it out there right now, you'll find this example coming up in early mid-June, when hopefully the Cavaliers are in the NBA Finals. So all the timesheets, those are all 9 o'clock games, even the ones that start in Cleveland.
Yeah, and by the way, it also makes sense tonight that it's a 6 o'clock start, just so that there isn't an absolute zoo down there, because in that same complex there, Progressive Field, that's where Quicken Loans Arena is, where the Cavaliers host the Hawks tonight.
Indeed.
In Game 2, which is an 8 o'clock start.
And we'll have that for you here on The Ticket, courtesy, of course, of our friends at ESPN Radio, 7 o'clock pregame time right after Face Off, the hockey show tonight.
So, yeah, that's good to know. And certainly, like I said, just staggered starts there is good for everybody down there. Okay. Speaking of the NBA, we're endeavoring to pull somebody from Atlanta to join us to talk a little bit about this game number 2 tonight from the Hawks' perspective and just see what they say. And we're not confirmed on whether or not we're going to have anybody yet. We're working on it. We'll let you know when we do. But there is a lot to talk about regarding that series and the series that will follow, or that should follow, and that is the series would be the Cavaliers, assuming they do finish off the Hawks. I don't know anybody who thinks they won't. They will play the winner of Miami and Toronto. The Heat, of course, got off to a great start in that series last night by winning Game 1 on the road
despite
Toronto.
Nearly blowing that game and giving up the half-court heave.
Kyle Lowry dialed it up. Boy, that ball had so much arc, I thought it was going to bring rain. And it was perfect. It's one of those ones where it's not a heave. It was a half-court shot. I mean, he literally flicked the wrist and eyed it up. It wasn't just one of those lucky throws that slammed in off the backboard. He shot it and splashed it from half-court and sent it to OT. But they didn't have the momentum to keep it going. They didn't have the ability to keep it going, I guess I should say, because Miami dominated the overtime. Anyway, that's the next round for the Cavaliers. And what's very interesting is that somebody like LeBron James would be looking ahead and get hooked by a reporter's question the way he did. And, Jim, I think you have this. LeBron James was asked by a reporter at their practice or their shoot-around about playing Miami in the next round. And surprisingly, he didn't say, I'm not thinking about the next round. We have three more games we have to win against the Atlanta Hawks. This is something that it's one game at a time. It's one series at a time. And I'm not looking ahead. Instead, LeBron not only was looking ahead, he was more than willing to say, I know who I want to play in the next round. The team I want to play is the Miami Heat because I want to play against my boy. I want to play against Dwayne Wade, my best friend. And this has got a lot of people talking for various reasons. I want to see if we can let you hear this. Here we go.
You know, it'd be great to play against those guys in the postseason. But I've always, throughout my whole career, I've always wanted to go against Wade in a playoff series. I mean, that's just, we've always talked about it even before we became teammates in 10. So, you know, I don't think it's not been heavy on my mind, but it's crossed my mind throughout my whole career.
There's a party party happening in the movie, Space Jam 2. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Now he gets into some other things there. But the part that kind of has people talking is saying, A, why would he want the Heat when the Heat have owned him this year, particularly down in Miami where LeBron has played terribly? A lot of people think, Kush, because, and by the way, Jim and I welcome you to 866-240-1065 if you want to talk about this stuff. Particularly because LeBron hasn't played well down there, a lot of people feel because he's not in, you know, enemy mode. He's not in the enemy mode. He's down there hugging Dwayne Wade. He's kind of laughing while they're getting blown out, and he's on the bench not taking it seriously for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That South Beach vibe that he was part of for the 4 years that he was there, you know, it doesn't, I don't know what it does to him, but it doesn't have
Let's
him
put it this way, because
in the same assassin mode that he has when
bingo.
He goes into pretty much every other building. So what do you make of him saying, yeah, I want to play D. Wade, my friend, and I want to play the Heat in a series that, quite frankly, I would be more worried about than if they were to play the Raptors?
Oh, no question. And the thing that keeps popping into my head, Bob, on this kind of subject, especially in the last week and a half, remember back one of our storylines in the Cavs-Pistons first-round series was Stanley Johnson talking about getting in LeBron's head, and we kind of poo-pooed it and laughed it off. There's something to be said, at least playing at Miami, amongst something in LeBron's head.
No doubt.
This whole thing has a vibe of be careful what you wish for kind of thing, especially when a side note to Miami in general is that whole separate story about how Bosch, even his wife and others, are trying to persuade the NBA and the Heat to say, guys, I'm ready. Put me back out on the floor. You get a Chris Bosch back out on the floor in a Cavs Heat series, that makes it even tougher than I think it's already going to be.
No question about it. No
this
question
is a be
about
careful
it.
What you
I
wish
don't think
for
that's
going to
happen, by the way, but it is interesting
either.
That you brought it up. Because it was something I wanted to kick around a little bit today. And maybe we'll do this more after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which is coming right up. But I just kind of wanted, this is a it's a story that just fascinates me. Chris Bosh and his wife have gone public, really, really demanding an opportunity to play for the Miami Heat in these playoffs. Not only have they gone public in an attempt to try to maybe get the fans in Miami on the ownership and
right.
on the general manager and on the coach and into doing what they want, which is to see Bosch join Wade and Johnson and the rest of these guys in a possible run to maybe play and beat the Cavaliers. But they've also gone to the NBAPA. Bosch has reached out to the National Basketball League Players Association and demanded that the opportunity to play. The association issued a statement on that I'll share with you after the Sports Center, which we're going to have here in a moment during this timeout. But Bosch wants to play in the Heat, so concerned for his health, so concerned for what may happen as a complication of the blood clots that he is coming back from, just don't want him to do it. And I want to kick this around today and ask you this. As a fan, if this was your team, if this was the Pistons, if this was your team, if you're the Cavaliers, and one of your players, one of your star players, one of your best players, was in this situation, who got a doctor to sign off and say he's fine, he's not in jeopardy, because that's what Bosch has done. I guess it took a while to find a doctor who would sign off. If your guy is willing to sign a waiver saying anything that happens to me, I will not hold you or the league responsible, then I and my medical staff or my medical caregivers are ready and willing to take this risk that we want to play, would you want your guy to play? Or would you be backing your team that is saying, no way, this is just too risky, we appreciate your competitiveness, we appreciate your dedication, your drive, and your desire, but we are doing what's best for you, despite wanting you on the floor, so we can try to win a championship. This takes precedence. How would you feel if this was one of your players on your Pistons team or your Cavaliers team? Because I think it's a fascinating study here in watching and listening to these two sides argue as the team tries to protect the player who is willing to put himself potentially in jeopardy. So I want to get your thoughts on that, and I'll tell you what the NBAPA said about that, too, coming up. All right, it is 3:30. We'll get a Sports Center now. I want to open up the phone lines at 866-240-1065. It looks like we are going to be guest-free because I don't think we're going to be able to hook up with our Hawks connections to talk about this series.
I'm at least still working on it for maybe tomorrow in a wrap scenario, so we shall see.
But we want you now then at 866-240-1065. Join us. If you want to tweet to us, do so online on Twitter at SportsRadio1065. If you want to Facebook comment to us, do that on 1065, the ticket, the Facebook page there. But what would you do if this was one of your guys? In other words, we'll play it out with these guys. Do you think the Heat should let Chris Bosh sign a waiver, a medical waiver saying, I will not hold you accountable, and put him on the floor to try to win this series against the second-seeded Raptors and potentially then to battle the Cleveland Cavaliers at full strength in the Eastern Conference Finals? What do you think the Heat should do? What would you want your franchise to do? We'll talk about that next right here on The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
It is 3:37. Thanks for joining us right now and for sticking with us on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket got you until 5 o'clock. Stick with us until then. We'll have Drive Time with Miller coming up at 5. Also at 4:10, we're going to get back to baseball a little bit. Talked to Fennec yesterday as the Tigers invaded Progressive Field in Cleveland to take on the Indians. He's, of course, the Tigers beat writer. We will talk to Meisel today, Zach Meisel, at about 4:10, who is at Progressive Field hosting Fennec and the boys from Detroit in that three-game set. But I want to get back to this Chris Bosh story. I'm going to talk to you at 866-240-1065. Also the LeBron story. If you want to go there, we'll get there in a moment. But this is just a fascinating story to me, even though it's not necessarily involving one of the teams that we cover. It's NBA and it's playoff worthy because the Cavs might end up facing the Miami Heat in the next round. How would the dynamic of that series change if Chris Bosh, multi-time All-Star, was playing for the Heat? The NBPA, the Players Association for the National Basketball Association, has requested a meeting with the Heat to resolve the situation with Chris Bosh. There's a standoff here between the Heat and Bosh. It's unprecedented, and it's potentially dangerous from a medical standpoint for Bosh. Chris Bosh, as you probably know, hasn't played since the All-Star break back in February because of blood clots. And he says he wants to come back and play now in these playoffs to try to win a championship, or at least to try to win an Eastern Conference championship. Against his former teammate, LeBron James, presumably once they beat the Atlanta Hawks. So Bosh now wants to involve the Players Association. And he says that his right to play, especially if he waives his own medical, signs a medical waiver saying that he will not hold the Heat nor the NBA responsible if something happens, should make him active and eligible to play, and that the Heat cannot keep him out. That's kind of the stand that he is taking. According to Deadspin, the Players Association issued this statement, quote, "Our top priority is Chris's health and well-being. We have spoken with Chris and his agent and have reached out to the Miami Heat. We are hopeful that all parties involved can meet as soon as possible to resolve the situation." So they want a meeting to resolve the situation. But at its core, this issue is very, very simple. Bosh doesn't feel any symptoms whatsoever due to his condition. So that means in his mind, he's fully healthy. And he thinks he can do his job. And he wants to do it now in the playoffs, at championship time, at winning time. The Heat, looking bigger picture, won't allow him to do this, even if he helps them potentially win a conference championship or better, because they feel as though he doesn't know how sick he really is. And according to some people that I've heard on various shows and read in various statements, medical professionals, once you have blood clots, the medication that you take for blood clots does work. It can indeed thin your blood and open up arteries and veins, etc., that were being clogged or clotted, as it were, for your blood to flow more smoothly. It does indeed work, but you can get elbowed, you can fall hard, you can land hard, you can put yourself into a situation where if you do start bleeding internally, for example, You can't stop it. They couldn't cut you open fast enough and in order to stop it. If you got elbowed in the head or got knocked down taking a charge or anything, you know, accidental happens, you bang your head on the hardwood of an NBA floor and you start bleeding in your brain, it's over. This is what a lot of medical professionals have pointed out. Miami is trying to be responsible here rather than greedy and having one of their best players come and play. Bosch is saying, I don't care, I want to play. What would you do? Is Bosch crazy? Is he nuts? Is he just insane for wanting to? I mean, he's a father of five. Is he nuts for wanting to come back and play? Or do you? I kind of have nothing but respect for both sides in this strange story. You know, I want to salute Chris Bosch for being a competitor, for being a guy who's making $20 million a year, for being a guy who wants to win a championship, for being a guy who wants to be there for his teammates, his brotherhood, as we all know, any competitive team sport, that roster is filled with guys who see each other as their brothers. He's a guy who wants to go and do his job and help his brothers, even at his own personal risk. I salute that. But then Pat Riley, Mickey Arison, Eric Spoelstra, the leadership, the front office and coaching staff of the Miami Heat are saying, yeah, we want you here. We would love to have you here. We would love to have you help us win a championship. Help us beat the Raptors. Help us beat the Cavaliers. Show LeBron he should have stayed here in South Beach. But, bro, you take a shot the wrong way. Something happens. We will never, ever be able to overcome that. As a team, as a franchise, as coaches, as a league, and most importantly, as human beings, they'd never be able to live with themselves if they went ahead and in a risky fashion, decided to let the player call his own medical shots here and put him out there, and then something tragic happened. They'd never be able to live with themselves. This is one of those fascinating stories that there's no right or wrong answer to. It's just, but yet I'm asking you to give one. What would you do? What would you do? What if this is the Pistons? What if this was your Cavaliers? Any team that you love. 866-240-1065 is the number. Let's go to Nate in Toledo. Nate, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, good sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Well, first, I would, if I was Miami, I wouldn't. I would. They have the right stand. I would say I didn't want him to play because of his health. I can understand Bosch wanting to play. I can understand the union calling the meeting so that it, so it can be aired. But it's up to the NBA to say no. He's getting paid. He's not getting docked. So everybody is admirable. But for the best interest of the NBA, you don't want another Hank Gaps.
And that's, you know what? That's the second time I've heard that name today. That's the second time. And I remember I was a kid. I was a high school kid. When was, what year was that when Gathers died? Was it like 86 or 5 or?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, he died on the court. And I tell you what, that had a profound impact on me. I was a teenager. I was either in high school or the very beginning of college. I can't remember what year it was exactly. But, yeah, second time I've heard that. And that is what their mind has got to be on. I mean, can you imagine what would happen, you know, in this league? And obviously, you know, to, most importantly, what would happen to, you know, five children whose dad is gone and it's something that could have been prevented. And sometimes
you just
have to realize, you know, if you're Chris Bosh, sometimes you just have to realize I got dealt a bad hand here. You know, Gale Sayers' career ended after 7 years because he suffered a knee injury they couldn't repair. Now, today they could have. But sometimes guys just get conditions that make it impossible for them to play anymore safely, and they have to just say, you know, this is the hand God dealt me, whether they believe in God or not, but this is what it is. And you know, safety and precautions have to be taken first and foremost rather than being bold and brave and wanting to go out and be heroic.
Right, it's just the way it is. It's sort of like the concussion thing in football. You discussed it before. It can't be up to the players because players want to play, and it has to be whatever medical experts. Whatever the league is saying, as long as they're providing for you financially, and you're not being docked or penalized because of that medical condition, as unfortunate as it is, I think the safety of the player has to take precedent.
Yeah, and I think your concussion analogy is a good one, because as we've said for years and years and years, players who say, man, I'm a little woozy, but I'm good, I'm going back in, will always opt to be a competitor, and right, almost always anyway. And sometimes they have to be saved from themselves, rescued from their own competitive desire by somebody who's thinking with a clearer head and without emotion being involved, but just simply science and health and medical facts at their disposal. And I think that's what the Heat are doing right here.
Right. And also, LeBron situation, whether he wants to play against Miami or not. He probably should not have said anything. That would have been the safest thing
to
do.
That's what I'm saying. I'm surprised he said anything like it. You know, if you're in Atlanta right now, what are you doing? If you're a Hawks player, if you're Budenholzer, your coach, you're looking at these guys and saying, dude doesn't even respect you enough to say, I'm going to beat the Hawks three more times. He's already picking his opponent for the next round. You talk about bulletin board, not that it might mean anything, but it's just one of those mistakes you wouldn't expect a seasoned veteran like LeBron, with the media that he's endured through the years, a mistake that he would make.
Right. But you can't blame him for wanting to play against Miami. He shouldn't have said it, but you can't blame him for wanting to play against them. It's not getting what you wish for. It's just that if you're a competitor, you want to play the best. I got to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate it. And I get that he wants to play the best, but here's the weird part about that. And have a great day, Nate. Here's the part about that. Would he be playing the best? Because essentially he'd be asking to play a lower seed. You know, the Raptors are the second seed in the East. They're the team that almost caught the Cavaliers and overtook them as the best team in the East at the end of the regular season. So if you want to play the best, technically you'd say, I want to play the Raptors, because they're the number two seed. A 1-versus-2 showdown is what you look for, right? Well, to say that I want to play the Heat isn't saying I want to play the best in my mind. It's saying I want to play my buddy. I want to play my pal, because Dwayne and I have talked about it for our entire careers, about how it'd be cool to be against each other in the playoffs. Obviously, they've experienced being with each other in the playoffs, but he said Dwayne and I have always talked about what it would be like to play against one another. And I think that's kind of interesting, given the fact that when he plays against Dwayne, quite frankly, LeBron James is not himself. When he plays against Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, since he has come back from Miami to Cleveland to play against Dwayne Wade, he doesn't treat him like he's an enemy. He treats him like he's a pal, and they're on the playground just kind of clowning a little bit and playing against one another for fun, not for championships. Now, maybe the playoffs would change that motive, change his mindset. Let's put it that way. Maybe he would lock in and be the same serious superstar that he is against everybody else. But all I know is his record since he's been back from Miami, and he's been in Cleveland, has not been good, particularly while playing in Miami. And for him to call out the Heat and say, that's who I want to play just because it's my buddy, I find very, very strange, and I kind of disagree. I think the Heat are a threat. Bosch or no Bosch, I think the Heat are a threat to the Cavaliers, perhaps more so than the second-seeded Raptors would be in a potential second-round matchup like that. But this is...
It'd be great to play against those guys in a postseason. But I've always, throughout my whole career, I've always wanted to go against Wade in a playoff series. I mean, that's just... We've always talked about it even before we became teammates in 10. So, I don't think it's not been heavy on my mind, but it's crossed my mind throughout my whole career.
So there's LeBron James saying, yeah, it's crossed his mind, and yeah, I want to play against Dwayne. I think it'd be cool. It's something we've always talked about wanting to do. And, okay, but, it's just one of those things where LeBron James' normal answer there would be, and a guy with his experience, normal answer would be, I'll talk to you about next series. Right now, I got a game tonight. This was earlier today, by the way, at their shoot-around out in Independence at Cleveland Clinic Courts there. I got a game tonight against the Atlanta Hawks. I got to figure out a way to win game two. We can't let them steal one in our home building. We almost let it get away with it from us in game one. We got to find a way to lock them down again. Just focus. Playoff focus. Kind of like the whole reason he shuts down the social media during the playoffs. It's all about locking in on the matter at hand. So I found it a little bit interesting. And he has made it clear he's been watching the Heat. He watches them on TV. He watches them against Toronto. He said, I was looking forward to game one, and the way he was able to close that game out, he said they all gritted it out last night, not only Miami, but Toronto. It was a slugfest watching that game, he said, but they were able to pull it out as well. But anytime I'm able to watch my guys do work, it's definitely motivating for sure. You know, and I could sit here and you know, try to mentally decode what certain statements mean. I could be right or I could be wrong, but I'll tell you what, I promise you, other people are decoding those. And when he says things like, my guys, again, talking about the Heat, Dwayne Wade and his former teammates, my guys, watching them do work is definitely motivating. What does that mean? They're his guys. Is he going to not be as hard on his guys as he is on other teams? Or does that mean I want to beat my guys so much more? Thus far, it has been the former and not the latter. He has taken it easy, and he has not really approached it very seriously. 866-240-1065. I want to get you on the radio. Talk a little bit more about both of those stories, actually. Another story is, since we're going to be going into baseball after the top of the hour, that I also want to throw at you. Maybe you heard about it today. Maybe you didn't. Major League Baseball, according to multiple sources, is about to announce another PED suspension. I'm going to ask Zach Meisel his thoughts about this. Meisel is, of course, a beat writer covering the Indians. They take on the Tigers today. Yesterday we talked Tigers baseball with Anthony Fenech. Today it's the Tribe's turn. And Meisel, we'll talk about, obviously, what happened last night with Verlander and et cetera. But this is just a story for all baseball people. TJ Quinn of ESPN's Outside the Lines is among those reporting that MLB is expected to announce another player suspended for failing a PED test. He writes, does TJ Quinn, Major League Baseball is expected to announce in the next few days that another player has tested positive for the steroid turinabol, a drug that was once commonly used by East German athletes in the 1970s. The positive test is one of a handful being processed. Two sources familiar with the cases told Outside the Lines, meaning it's all but certain that more announcements will follow that. What in the world is happening? What is happening? We thought the steroid era that brought us Barry Bonds' shame, Roger Clemens' shame, Mark McGwire's shame, Sammy Sosa's, Alex Rodriguez, and I know Rodriguez is still playing, but we thought that the steroid era was over. More stringent testing, more severe punishments. Everybody knows we've got to clean the game up now. Here is the National League batting champion, D. Gordon, being suspended for PEDs last week. Now this announcement that not just one, but multiple suspensions are about to be announced. And we're not talking about, hey, I took something that had, I don't know, codeine or some other substance in it in a bottle of cough syrup that wasn't, that was banned, or this, you know, amphetamine or that, whatever. I'm not that fluent, obviously, in the drug culture, the performance enhancing drug culture, to name any more drugs, but you get my point. We're talking about straight-up steroid, turinabol, a drug that was used by the East German. Do you remember the East? Do you remember the jokes about the East German women's swimming team, about how they were bigger than the men for other teams, about how they had hair in their under their armpits? And I say that not to degrade or to defame another country, but it was what it was. They were, and they were using all kinds of steroids that were banned, eventually banned by the Olympic committees. And this is what they're using now today in baseball. Quinn's story, TJ Quinn from ESPN. Also has more, including how improved testing procedures may have led to this recent spate of suspensions. In saying that, basically, a lot of players have still been cheating because they know what the testing procedures are and they know how to beat them. And now that the improved procedures, you know, it's kind of like that whole thing, you know, one side tries to outdo the other. The testers realize that they were being beaten, so they changed the procedures, and now it's going to be up to the cheaters to find a way to beat the new tests. And back and forth we go. This report comes not long after D. Gordon's suspension. And how about this one to follow up on a story we've been talking about the last couple of weeks right here on the Extravaganza? You want to know whose picture is featured on this story that I'm reading right now about Major League Baseball announcing another PED suspension? There's a picture on this webpage. I won't tell you which sports site it is. But there's a picture of Jake Arrieta. The Jake Arrieta, who is basically making baseball history on a nightly basis, or on every five nights basis, every time he starts. He is pitching and has been for this extended period of time, literally as well as anybody has ever pitched. And you can say any name you like, from Randy Johnson to Greg Maddux to Roger Clemens to Sandy Koufax. Go back wherever you want to go. Jake Arrieta is pitching as well as right now or better than all of them. I can give you a bunch of stats about what Arrieta is doing for the Chicago Cubs, who are 19-6 after they won again last night. Jake Arrieta is untouchable. And Jake Arrieta is the man who literally just two weeks ago, brought up PEDs on his own. No one had accused him publicly. No one had said anything about Jake Arrieta. Just Jake Arrieta said that, yeah, I got guys who think I'm cheating, and I think it's kind of funny. You know, I take it as a compliment, actually, because, you know, I haven't changed. My size hasn't changed, and I'm just working hard, and I challenge anybody to work as hard as I do. And there have been people who have wondered, man, how'd this dude get so good so fast? How did Jake Arrieta go from being a 500 pitcher with an ERA, career ERA of over 4 for those years with the Orioles, to suddenly being untouchable for the Chicago Cubs? How did that happen? Yeah, some people have asked that question. But Jake Arrieta is the first one to say, people think I'm on steroids. Man, I don't like the direction this is headed. I want to believe everything that we're seeing from Jake Arrieta is historic for his history's sake, not for test tube's sake. And he's the only one that's actually made us question it and made us wonder about it. Arrieta's numbers right now are simply staggering. The Cubs have won every one of his past 19 starts. He's got a stretch of pitching going on, like I said, that literally outdoes some of the greatest pitchers in the history of this game. I'll give you more of those when we talk baseball with Zach Meisel coming up next. We're going to go out to Cleveland. Tigers are there for game 2 of the series tonight. It's raining out there, though, so whether or not they play, we will see. They got a 6:10 first pitch scheduled. Tigers and Indians. We'll talk about it with Zach Meisel coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5.
I think naturally, of course. I mean, that's been since I came back. You know, it would be great to play against those guys in the postseason. But I've always, throughout my whole career, I've always wanted to go against Wade in the playoff series. I mean, that's just, we've always talked about it even before we became teammates in 10. So, you know, I don't think it's not been heavy on my mind, but it's crossed my mind throughout my whole career.
Dragic met by Joseph. Dragic throws it up. Oh, it's good, and a foul! Goran Dragic! A chance at a four-point play. Wade makes his move on Joseph. 5 to shoot. Wade to the corner. Dragic. A three ball for Dragic. And Miami leads by 5. They need a 3 to tie. Lowry. Half-court heave. A prayer at the buzzer. Oh! Kyle Lowry! He hits! Overtime in Toronto!
Does Kyle Lowry have another one in?
8 seconds. Nearly stolen. DeRozan loses the ball. Guess who? Dwayne Wade streaks in. Doesn't dunk it cleanly, but it goes down. And that will be the knockout punch for Miami.
It's the Goran Dragic that every basketball fan has came to know, to make some outside shots because of how the defense plays. He's just been very aggressive. To be successful in this playoffs the way we want to be, and we need that. Well, I think as a team, we didn't play a great game. We had a lot of turnovers early that led to, you know, them getting transition buckets, but we was only down 2, you know, going into the break. So we can play better.
Here's the 2-2. Swinging a high fly ball, center field, fairly deep. Going back, goes. He got a late break. It's over his head all the way to the wall. That's going to score 2. Kipnis is in. Lindor right behind him. No throw. 2-out, 2-run double from Mike Napoli. He got another fastball, and he didn't miss it. 2-0 Indian. High fly ball, left field. This one's deep. This one's got a chance. Ball is gone. A home run. Ian Kinsler with number 5 carries the big wall and left. The Tigers are on the board, now trailing 4-2. 3-1, swinging a fly ball right field, way back in right, and gone.
Wow.
Francisco Lindor with a no-doubter to right, his second of the year. It's a 3-run shot, That's a shot to the gut after the Tigers had just scored two. Indians lead it 7-2.
The 0-2.
Curveball, strike three. Got him.
Wow. That was a beauty.
A rough night for Justin Verlander. The Indians' offense have been quiet for a week. Again, they find a way to beat up on Tigers pitching for the third time in four meetings this year. The Indians have won all four meetings.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two is underway. There's a lot of stuff jam-packed into that montage because there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening. Tonight in the city of Cleveland, as we continue right here on Toledo Sports Leader, we are ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, yeah, 6:10 baseball. Well, raindrops are going to have some say in that, I suppose. But 6:10 baseball, Tigers, Indians, game two of their series. Tribe now has won the last four against the Motor City Bengals, if you will. And Justin Verlander, once again, had his struggles against the Indians. It's a guy that really couldn't do anything wrong against the Indians for a stretch of his career, and now he can't beat them to save his life. We'll talk a little bit about that, but that's 6:10. Then at 8 o'clock, of course, the Cavaliers game two against the Atlanta Hawks in the Eastern Conference semifinals. We'll talk more about that coming up, but let's stay on the baseball side of things right now as we welcome Zach Meisel to the program. Zach is a beat reporter and writer and sports writer extraordinaire pretty much in every endeavor for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, Cleveland.com, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Zach, how you doing, sir?
I'm well, Bob. How's it going?
I'm good. Let me ask you first and foremost, most important question I have is, did Fenix stay awake for last night's nine innings?
He did, but I don't know if he went back to Detroit or if he's asleep in his hotel room now because I haven't seen him yet today.
he's probably snoozing it out in his room, and he'll just walk over to the park refreshed so he doesn't get embarrassed again. I got to see that video.
I'm sure I'll pay for this eventually in some way. But for now, I guess I'll just eat it up while I can.
You know what we have to do is we have to find a way to Laramie Tunstall him. We got to say, wait till he's in a very big moment. He's doing a TV interview or something like that, and then release that of him snoozing at the ball game as he talks about how what a thrilling game that was the night before. We got to find a way to just jack with him. That would be. He said he's going to make it his mission to wipe that from every phone that has it and every internet social media. But obviously, we're just having fun with our good friend Anthony. All right, Indians had a lot of fun. I got a lot of ground to cover with you, Zach. Indians, Tigers tonight, and beyond. We got to talk a little about one of the biggest stories in baseball today that broke a little bit earlier on regarding PEDs. But let's talk about last night. Justin Verlander, for a stretch of his career, the Indians could not touch him. Literally, it didn't matter what was going on, how hot they were, how bad he was. He owned the Indians. Now, it's quite the opposite. Indians had lost, what, five out of their last six games, all one-run games. The offense had been stagnant. Justin Verlander, you figure if he's ever going to get back to dominating the Indians, it would have been last night. Instead, they break out the whooping sticks on the former MVP. Just a day after, by the way, it was announced that he got engaged to Kate Upton. I guess he deserved a loss after having that victory. why are the Indians suddenly so dialed in when they stand in against Justin Verlander?
Well, it's weird because I think back to a few years ago, Manny Acta was the manager, and that's when you alluded to it. Justin Verlander, it seemed like he owned the Indians, except the only guy who could get him was Shelly Duncan. He always seemed to put a home run or two in the left field bleachers, and so he would always play against Verlander, even though it was righty on righty. And so some things can't be explained. But with Verlander, I guess the approach is, you want to make him work early because he has always seemed to get better as the game goes on. And the Indians last night, I think Verlander threw 38 pitches in the first inning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were fortunate. They got a couple two-out hits with guys on base. And, you know, next thing you know, Verlander's at 60 pitches through three, and he's in the 80s pretty quickly. And he certainly, he got better. I mean, obviously Lindor hits the three-run homer later on, but I don't know. I don't know that Verlander pitched pretty well in Detroit against the Indians. He gave up the two solo home runs, and that was about it. But I really do think that if you make him work early when he's trying to figure out if the off-speed stuff is working, he's trying to figure out if he's got the good fastball that particular day, that's your chance to pounce. That's your best opportunity. And if you can get him early, then good, because a lot of times we've seen in the past, if you don't get him early, then he's going to throw seven or eight innings, and you're in trouble.
Is most of this about Verlander and the way he's throwing and what he's doing early, et cetera, et cetera? Or is this just the Indians being what I think a lot of people, and we talked about this some during spring training, Zach, and you did too, I think, being what they are, this is a lineup that's going to be, you know, feast or famine. They're going to be hitting and they're going to be exploding on teams, or they're going to be just completely shut down and quiet. They're not going to be a consistent team that goes out there and gives you, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 hits a night and give you 4 or 5 runs. They're either going to be one run or shut out, or they're just going to explode just depending on what kind of a groove they're in.
Yeah, Verlander struggled pretty much the whole year, and you could say that about every Tigers starting pitcher except Jordan Zimmermann, I think.
Zach, just to underscore that, I read this stat before. The Tiger staff has a 4.43 ERA as a starting staff. Take away Zimmermann's, and it's 5.75. That just lets you know how good Jordan Zimmermann has been and how bad everybody else has been. So you're 100% right about that. Please continue.
The Indians have been feast or famine for a couple of years now, and this year I think it's even more exaggerated because they've struck out way more than they have in years past. And Mike Napoli's striking out at like a 40% rate, which is much higher than he normally does. Jason Kipnis is striking out a lot more than normal. So they've kind of had, I mean, they've had some power. We've seen it from Napoli. We've seen it from Santana. Lindor's shown it a little bit. But so it seems like instead of – they've tried to build this offense kind of like Kansas City, where it's just there's a single here. Here's another single. You go first to third. Here's a sack fly. Here's, you know, singles and doubles and taking extra bases and stuff. But that isn't really the offense that they have. They've got, at least so far, an offense that is either going to be – they're going to pounce on you and they're going to string a bunch of hits together and hit for some power, or they're just going to strike out a lot and it's going to be a long night. So – it's tough. The thing that they were fortunate with in Detroit is that the first night they faced Verlander and it was feast or famine. They hit 2 solo home runs and then they struck out a ton and they didn't score any other runs. But luckily they only gave up 1 run. And then the next day we saw them score 10 runs and they chased Anibal Sanchez pretty early and they won 10-1. So it's tough. It almost makes you think that's why pitching is so critical for the Indians, because if you can just guarantee that the pitching staff is going to hold the opposing offense in check, then the offense knows you don't need to go crazy here. You just need a few runs and you can win.
That's very well said. We're talking to Zach Meisel, who covers the Cleveland Indians and more for the Northeast Ohio Media Group. He's at Progressive Field tonight for the Game 2 of the Indians and Tigers series. Tigers have dropped 4 straight to the Indians now after the sweep up the Motor City. Let's talk a little bit about Josh Tomlin last night, because Tomlin is 4-0 now, first of all. He's got a 3.13 ERA. He was maybe, I don't know, you can tell me whether or not, since he was the fifth starter, I guess you could make the argument he was the least likely. How do I want to frame that or phrase that? He was the guy that perhaps was the most surprising to make the rotation. We all know that Cody Anderson has been moved down now, but Anderson and Tomlin making that rotation over Bauer was a surprise to a lot of people, and yet he's been as consistent as anybody in the rotation.
Yeah, he was going to be on the team regardless because he signed a 2-year contract extension. Everybody on the team, on the staff, loves having him around, and he pitched really well in the last couple of months last year when he returned from shoulder surgery. He's kind of a guy who always is going to defy expectations, and he's always going to surprise you because he doesn't throw that hard.
No,
he gives up a lot of home runs, and he just, I mean, even last night he didn't look that great. He gave up 9 hits in 6 innings, and Terry Francona after the game, the first word he said when asked what he thought of Tomlin was that he just said he competed like heck, and there's something about him. I mean, with the Indians, the last 11 times Tomlin has pitched the day after an Indians loss, the Indians have won with Tomlin on the mound.
Wow.
So I don't know if there's a rhyme or reason to it, but he's a guy that you can depend on. And if you remember when he came up in the major leagues, I think it was like his first 35 starts as a big leaguer, he went at least 5 innings. And it's, you know, that's a guy who is any pitcher from like the 1930s. Would see that statistic and laugh and ask why that's impressive, but it says something. You know, you're not going to have to go to your bullpen and burn through all your relievers when he's on the mound, and you're not going to have to play from behind and climb out of a big deficit when he's on the mound, because he's reliable and he's going to give you 5 or 6 or 7 innings. And at least for the last calendar year, he's held opposing offenses in check. So it's strange because we're waiting for Kluber to get on a roll. Carrasco's sidelined now for another month. Salazar's been good, but he hasn't pitched deep into games. We don't know what they have in Anderson and Bauer. And Tomlin has kind of been the rock in that rotation.
That's amazing. And you're right. I mean, you know, the fifth starter's been the rock of the rotation, essentially. And it is a great story. And you're right. He battles every single time. He doesn't dominate, but he goes out there and he's just a smart pitcher and gets it done. You mentioned Kluber needs to get on a roll. He's 1-4. He's obviously better than that. He, you know, for a while there, it was the same thing. I'm not getting any support. Then, of course, they put 10 up against the Tigers in a 10-1 win two starts ago. He lost in Philadelphia. Where do you think he is? How close is he to being the Cy Young type of Kluber from 2 years ago?
Yeah, it seems like he keeps scratching the surface, keeps teasing us, but maybe isn't quite there. And this is how he was in the first 6 weeks of last season, too. Got off to a slow start and then finally hit his groove in mid-May. I was interested last week when the Indians were in Detroit, Kluber threw a gem. Miguel Cabrera wasn't really going quite yet. And Cabrera, his numbers against Kluber are just off the charts. And yet Kluber fared well against him in Detroit. So I'm really interested to see how that works tonight. Cabrera's been hitting better over the last week or so. This is a Tigers offense that you can only keep down for so long. And even Francona said to Mickey Callaway the Sunday when they were finishing the sweep in Detroit, and they said, boy, I can't wait to get out of here because I feel like the Tigers offense is going to start just going crazy once we leave. And it did. And the Tigers won a bunch of games in a row. And now it'll be interesting to see if Kluber can keep them down again because it seems like you can only do so for so long and you just know Cabrera's going to erupt. And even when the Indians left, I think the next day, Cabrera hit two home runs. So it's only a matter of time, and it'll be interesting to see if that time is tonight with Kluber on the mound.
Yeah, we're always so worried about him, especially when I say we, I'm talking about Indians fans, of which, of course, I am one, and especially at Progressive Field. I'm sure you had this stat yesterday. Anthony Fenech was surprised when I gave this to him. In his last 30 games, not counting last night, in his last 30 games going into the series at Progressive Field, the slash line was 440, 493, and 808. 55 for 125 with 12 homers and 36 RBIs in his last 30 games at Progressive Field. So to say that he has, you know, like staked an ownership claim there is an understatement. And yet, you know, Corey Kluber goes at him tonight and hopefully can keep him down a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about other baseball stories, Zach, because I always enjoy your perspective. You and I, in fact, had a really long discussion about Jake Arrieta about a month ago. Or 3 weeks ago, perhaps, about Jake Arrieta and what he is doing, and his numbers continue to be historic. He's pitching as well, I think you'd agree, maybe as anybody ever has for this length of time, for this particular period of time. In his last 26 starts, dating back to last July, he's 22-1 with a 0.85 and two no-hitters. In his last 18 starts, 17-0, 0.55. He's given up a run every two full games pitched, essentially. There are a bunch of stats here about consecutive starts, consecutive this, that, and the other thing that are just, you know, he's up there with names like Maddox and Koufax and other guys. Now, I bring him up for that reason alone. It's just a fascinating story. But I bring him up because I also read another story today, Zach, that I want your thoughts on. And that is that, according to multiple sources, T.J. Quinn of ESPN is one who wrote this first. Major League Baseball is set to announce another PED suspension very soon. And according to T.J. Quinn of ESPN, at least a couple more will be announced right after that. Suddenly, the PED thing, after the batting champion in the National League was busted a week ago and suspended for 80 games, suddenly the PED thing that we kind of thought and hoped we were beyond is ramping back up again. And the picture, even though his name isn't mentioned in the article that I'm referring to, the picture that accompanied this article, Zach, is a picture of Jake Arrieta. And you and I talked about this, like I said, a few weeks ago, in which he brought up himself the notion that people think he's cheating and thinking that he is using some sort of performance-enhancing drugs. What do you make of the fact that baseball is about to announce another suspension for PEDs, and according to T.J. Quinn, probably more than one?
I go back and forth on a couple things here. people always want to say, oh, they need stricter policies, they need better testing. Yeah, maybe, but it's also, it's showing you that it works. And this is something that it seems like there have been a handful of players who have already tested positive for this particular PED that whoever gets announced this week is also testing positive for. And with Arrieta, it's pitchers, it's always weird because we talked about this, the noticeable difference in Arrieta between now and when he was struggling with Baltimore and couldn't really cut it at the major league level was his command. He couldn't throw strikes. His walk rate was super high, and it's really low right now. And that's not something that steroids is going to help. It's going to help with the recovery. And then the number one reason to take PEDs if you're a major leaguer is the fact that you have 162 games. You only have 20 off days in a 7-month stretch, and somehow you have to get your body ready every single day to play. And you get beaten up, and the travel gets to you, and the long hours, and you're up late at night, and some of these guys have families and kids, and it's just a lot. And so a lot of guys take this, or the guys who have taken the stuff have done it so that they can recover quicker. It helps you. You can go and do that extra workout the next day, even though you're really tired. You played an extra inning game the night before. And so you see it with hitters because your body recovers quicker, means your bat speed is going to be there because you have more energy and you're not sore and you're not tired. And so it makes sense. It's why we saw the home run spike and all the offense. But it's a little strange now just because the rules are so obvious. And these guys have so many resources at their disposal. They know no one takes anything without checking first. And it's why a lot of people have said, you know, every time someone gets busted, we hear the same canned quote. I accept full responsibility, but I didn't knowingly take anything. And that's fine, but you're still at fault and you're still guilty. And, you know, we're not expecting anyone to just come out and say, hey, I did it because I was trying to get through a full Major League Baseball season that was taking a toll on my body. And they're not going to say that because they're part of a union and they're trying to make money in the future, and you don't want to put any of that stuff at jeopardy. But it is the fact, and we all know why these guys are doing it. And they're trying to get ahead. But it's just, I guess I'm just kind of stumped that we're still seeing as many of these cases as we are.
The other reason that many of them are doing it, and they won't admit, just like you said, that they won't admit they're trying to get through a season, is they're trying to get that contract, which brings up, you know, D. Gordon, for example. And by the way, to his credit, we were just talking about Verlander and his performance last night against the Indians. Justin Verlander was one of the loudest voices, and certainly one of the most high-profile voices, since he is the de facto Tigers union rep in the MLBPA. He was one of those who said after D. Gordon got busted last week that he wants more stringent testing, that the players want a clean game. They're proud of the fact that their testing is better than any of the other sports, you know, and of course that was brought on by the shame of Bonds and Clemens and the others in the steroid era. But he said, we want it clean. And he said, I want stringent testing and I want harsher penalties, including once guys are popped. He said they shouldn't be allowed to play while their appeal is being heard. Because, for example, D. Gordon, and they played him earlier in the season, I think second week of the season, you know, said he might impact a game there and win a game for them while he is having his appeal heard for his PED suspension. And as you know, in 162 games, what if you lose a pennant or a division title by a game? You can always go back and say, if that dude hadn't played, you know, we wouldn't have lost that. And that might be an extreme example that Justin was using, but he said we want stricter penalties, harsher penalties and stricter testing because they, the players who are clean, are really, really sick and tired of being at a disadvantage.
I completely understand that perspective, too, and I'll never forget a conversation I had with Kenny Lofton one time a few years ago, and he is, if you get him going about this topic, he's not afraid to speak his mind because he feels like he was cheated out of a lot of money, a lot of glory. He was one of the guys who, it wasn't about home runs with him in that era, and he played right in smack dab in the middle of the era where everyone was doing it. Everyone was hitting home runs left and right, and everyone kind of turned their head and let it happen. And he says, look, the reason that he got kicked off the Hall of Fame ballot after 1 year because he didn't get 5% of the vote, when if he was on the ballot today, we would be talking about him as a legitimate candidate for the Hall of Fame. He's got the same numbers as Tim Raines and Tim Raines is getting 60 to 70% of the vote. But he was overshadowed by all those guys. And he played in that era, and they group him in, and he said he was overlooked all the time just because his numbers were batting average and on-base percentage and stolen bases and defense. And those things weren't appreciated as much when he played. So it's interesting to think about how maybe you don't realize it at the time, but maybe Lofton was cheated out of a lot of money. I mean, if he was playing today and had the production that he had during his career, he'd probably be one of the higher paid position players in the league. It's a lot more than just, oh, I made a mistake and now I'm going to have to sit out for half of the season. There's a lot that goes into it, and I'm fascinated to watch what happens with Abraham Almonte of the Indians, who's currently serving his 80-game suspension, because he's going to come back in the middle of the season, and I don't know that the Indians are just going to welcome him back with open arms and insert him into the lineup. He's going to have to prove himself. He's going to have to prove that he's the same player and is capable of the same things when he's clean, and especially after you miss as much time. So it's tough, because it's not like baseball can just say, hey, you know, you're kicked out forever. Oh, I mean, they're not at this point. They're not going to say you're kicked out forever, you can't make any more money, and that's it. But it does seem like no matter what you do, that it might not be as severe enough of a penalty, because what do the players care? You know, they missed half of a season, but by producing what they produced when they were on the juice, they earned millions of dollars.
Bingo.
And they were able to establish themselves.
And that's the part about this that people are talking about now. And Mike Lupica, who, of course, is an ESPN personality and a longtime writer for the Daily News, I thought put this really well. I think it was on Tuesday or maybe Monday, I don't know. But he said, the moment somebody is popped for PEDs and suspended, the moment that suspension is handed down, automatically contract should be voided. And you void that contract, you take away the incentive to do the cheating and run the risk of getting busted, because you're 100% right. What is D. Gordon thinking right now? Well, he's thinking, I've missed five. I got, 75 more than I have to miss, and that sucks. But while it sucks, I'm going to be laying here on a pile of money. It was worth it for me to run that risk. They don't take my guaranteed contract away. You take the guaranteed contract away the moment somebody gets a PED suspension, and then when it's lifted, or when it ends, I should say, then we negotiate from zero, because now the club has to decide how much value do we put on you now that we know you're going to be natural, or at least we expect you will be after this bust. We don't know if you're going to give us the same production you gave us now that we know you were cheating. Take the guaranteed contracts away. You take the carrot away. You take the incentive for these guys to cheat. Do you think it'll ever get to that?
I don't know. I don't know if the union would ever agree. I'm sure it will be brought up in the collective bargaining negotiations this year. I think back to Johnny Peralta got busted, and he missed the playoffs, or he missed the beginning of the playoffs. And I mean, I would think if I'm his teammate, that's just an absolute critical letdown. And I don't know how I would trust you again. And then he goes off and he signs a 4-year, $52 million contract with St. Louis. So that's, you're penalized in the temporarily, but it's certainly probably not severe enough, especially since there aren't repercussions down the line once your suspension is over.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And I think that's what's going to be the case. So going back just real quick, we don't know who this next one to be popped for, this East German. This is so funny. You know, I remember used to be jokes about East German women, the East German swim team, which had bigger muscles than most males and hair under their armpits and everything else. And this is what it was. They say this is an East German steroid that they used way back in the 1970s that somehow the players have grabbed onto in baseball. And this is what they're using. The testing is catching them. And this is a game of cat and mouse, where it seems like the more stringent and the more advanced the testing gets, then the more advanced the drug or the masking or whatever it is that they use to do this, and they go back and forth like this. So we don't know who it's going to be, but what do you think the odds are that it's a big name? I mean, D. Gordon is a big name because he was a batting champion, and quite frankly, ever since Jake Arrieta decided to put his name into all of this, again, I'm still staggered by the fact that he brought this up and nobody really mentioned his name, at least publicly. Do you think it's somebody like that?
It's a little bizarre that it was leaked ahead of time. We don't often see that, and it makes me think that it's not just some no-name minor leaguer.
Me too.
Backup player. It's hard to speculate. I don't know. It's But it's strange, and the fact that it's probably not just one person, that it's multiple people, and that a few people have already been popped for this season makes you wonder. I mean, it's not biogenesis yet, it's certainly the latest version of it.
Zach Meisel joining us from Cleveland Progressive Field tonight. Where the Indians, are they going to play there, or what's going on? I know it was raining. Are they? What's the forecast?
Well, Terry Francona said they should be good to go, but he also said that on opening day. So I'm not ready to take him at his word yet, but it looks overcast. There's been a few sprinkles here and there. I think they'll be okay, but
he's never going to live down. He's never going to live down that failed attempt at meteorology, is it? Is he?
No, and it's who knows? I know the game next door is going to be played rain or sunshine, and I think I know Terry Francona might find his way over there if the Indians were to be postponed.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a number of people weren't really disappointed if they called this one early enough to get over there. At least there's a two-hour window, right? Because 6:10 first pitch, and then 8:00 I think is when the Cavaliers and the Hawks get started. So, and you know what? I'm sure you've got that media pass. You'll probably be over there yourself. So one way or the other, you're going to watch some good competition tonight. Zach Meisel, who is a tremendous sports writer for Cleveland.com, the Northeast Iowa Media Group, Cleveland Plain Dealer. He'll be covering the Indians and the Tigers if they get it on tonight. Corey Kluber, Anibal Sanchez, and if not, watching some basketball. Zach, thanks so much for the time. We always love your analysis.
Always a pleasure, Bob. You got it.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right, there you go. It's 4:34. That's Zach Meisel from Cleveland, where the Tigers and the Indians will do battle. The rest of the show is yours. We did not make an Atlanta connection, and we were hoping to talk to somebody from the Hawks' point of view about this matchup, but we did not do that. So let's get you going, 866-240-1065. And you know what else I want to do before we take this time out for SportsCenter? I've got something outstanding for you if you are into stand-up comedy and if you are a fan of Jay Leno, the former host of The Tonight Show. Pair tickets to see Jay Leno at Stranahan. It's October 28th. Tickets for that show go on sale Friday. But if you want to beat the box office, join us right now. Be the 10th caller to 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. 10th caller gets Jay Leno at Stranahan on October 28th. Good luck. SportsCenter next. Your calls after that right here on ESPN 106.5. The ticket.
240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5. The ticket.
It is indeed the Extravaganza rolling on for about another 18 minutes. Then we're going to turn it over to Mike Miller in drive time, so stay right here. We got NBA basketball tonight, of course. Cavaliers, Hawks, Game 2, Eastern Conference semifinals. That'll be courtesy of ESPN Radio, which is why I'm so glad once again to be ESPN 106.5, the ticket. All right, phone lines are open at 866-240-1065, and we'll get to some phone calls quickly as we can. By the way, that was the number called by John Bunch from Finley a moment ago. He was our 10th caller, and that's why he won the tickets to Jay Leno at Stranahan, which is coming up in October. I've got something coming up much more quickly than that. On May 21st at Stranahan, the Toledo Symphony Orchestra is going to do the music of the Rolling Stones, and I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to see that if you're the 10th caller here in just a few minutes. Don't dial yet. Won't count yet. For now, if you want to dial, it's just to talk to us right here on the air on ESPN 106.5, the ticket. Before I do anything else, I want to say congratulations to today's KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week for this Wednesday. For the girls, congrats to Eastwood freshman softball pitcher Ashley Hitchcock. She hurled a complete game one-hit shutout Tuesday night of Lake, 15-0 in five innings due to the mercy rule. She's 13-0. This is a freshman, 13-0 on the year with a minuscule 0.85 ERA. Eastwood also undefeated on the year, stretching their mark to 15-0, 6-0 in NBC play. For the boys, more baseball, more on the diamond. Baseball this time, St. Francis sophomore baseball pitcher Carter Smith fired a complete game four-hitter in the Knights' 3-1 win over St. John's Tuesday. St. Francis now 10-3 overall, 5-2 in the track. If you have a high school athlete that you think deserves recognition for their outstanding performance, please send those nominations to us at athlete@1065theticket. athlete@1065theticket. Send us the information, and we will highlight the best athletes in the area each week. All right, this is really a fascinating story. I just tweeted it. And if you're on Twitter and you follow us, go take a look at it if you can. I mean, not if you're driving, obviously. But if you get an opportunity to take a look at it later, do it. I tweeted it. It's on our Twitter feed, Sports Radio 106.5. Follow us there, and you'll see all this stuff. Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter. It's a fascinating piece on ESPN.com. And I say that not to promote ESPN.com because of our ESPN affiliation. I say that because I was really fascinated by it. They did a segment or a feature, if you will. They did part one yesterday that was called The Could Have Beens. And it's basically kind of some of the busts throughout sports history, the tremendous potential that never really was materialized, either because of busts, they were just busts and they didn't pan out to what they could have been or should have been, or because they had some things happen to them that stopped them from being the greatest players that they could be. Just to give you an example, on the Could Have Beens feature from ESPN yesterday, Bo Jackson is number 24 on the Could Have Beens. Was he a bust? Of course not. Bo is one of the greatest players in the history of sports, baseball and football. Well, we all know what happened. When that horse collar tackle, which is now illegal, dislocated his hip, he had to have it replaced, and he was never the same. His career was cut short by that injury. Not to mention the fact that his own greatness at each individual sport was kind of cut short by his devotion to the other sport. That's how great Bo was. But just to give you some more examples, Roy Tarpley, the Michigan graduate, made his debut in 1986-87 season in the NBA with the Mavericks, appeared last in the league in 1995, was a star who never was allowed to remain a star. Why? Because he couldn't fight off his own demons, his own drug problems. Who else? Drew Henson, another Michigan guy, is on the could have been list. Not a bust, but just made the wrong choice. He was a Major League Baseball prospect and obviously an NFL prospect when he was at Michigan. Was a huge, huge talent in both sports. Made the decision to pursue baseball, went to the Yankees into their farm system, and quite frankly, never got out of it. Wasn't good enough. Tried to make a football comeback, but he had been away from that so long, it was not to be. So these are just talents that could have been that just didn't work out for any number of reasons. Brian Bosworth is on the list. Maurice Clarett, who never played a down in the NFL despite being an All-American with Ohio State, winning a national championship in 2002. Maurice Clarett's another one. Marcus Dupree, another one, whose NFL debut was in 1990, and he last played in 1991, one season, a variety of reasons, substance abuse among them. Sam Bowie is on the list. Sam Bowie, who was a tremendously multi-talented center at Kentucky, who is, if he has famously now taken, before Michael Jordan by the Blazers in the NBA draft, but, of course, could not stay healthy, but broke bones in his legs and never was able to make it. So that's the could have been side. And as fun as that is, as interesting as that is, that's not the part that I said was so fascinating. It's today's part two that I was just fascinated by as I sat here and was reading during the breaks. This is making the best even better. That's what this part two series of unfulfilled potential is all about, making the best even better. These are some of the greatest players of all time whose careers were cut short by any number of reasons and circumstances that had they been able to play consistently through the length of a normal career for their respective sport, they could have been even greater. For example, what if Michael Jordan's basketball career had not been put on hold for his little failed detour into baseball? What if Ted Williams had not left baseball to fight in World War II? What if Jim Brown had not decided to retire at the age of 30 and pursue acting the way he did? What would their numbers have looked like? Using the magic of 2016 analytics based upon their own performances as they trended during their years in the sports, based upon the performances of others at their ages, The ESPN analytics department was able to project what these great athletes could have done had they stayed in their games. For example, Michael Jordan, his actual total points in the NBA, 32,292, good for fourth on the all-time scoring list. The all-time scoring list is topped, of course, by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with nearly 40,000. What if Michael Jordan had not screwed around and went to play baseball in the mid-1990s? What if he had done? And then he left the NBA for three more seasons in the twilight of his career before deciding he wanted to come back and play a couple of injured type of seasons with the Wizards. If you restore, according to the analytics, Michael Jordan's missing seasons, the ones that he could have played had he just chosen to, Michael Jordan projects as the only 40,000-point scorer in league history. He would have led the league with 40,094 points. His career points per game average, which is already first at 30.1, would have actually dropped to 29.2 in these projections. Because what they do is, again, they project these things using analytics based on the decline in play as age rises, based on history, based on other players. So it's not just all giving him a bunch of more points. Rebounds. He retired with 6,672 rebounds, 133rd of all time. Had he played, he would have had 8,719, 63rd all time. Assists, he would have gone from 42nd to 16th in assists had he just played all of his career instead of quitting to do the things that he did. Now, there are other people who didn't quit. They just had circumstances affecting them. For example, we know about Barry Sanders. We all suspect, and I've said many times on this program and other places, that had Barry Sanders decided to keep playing past his 30th birthday, which of course we know he did not, he would have easily caught and passed and broken Walter Payton's all-time rushing record and would have rushed for more yards than Emmitt Smith. That was my belief, who of course is the all-time leading rusher. That was my belief. Well, now the analytics come out and they show us projecting three more seasons for Barry Sanders. They project three more years if he'd have just played to 33. Okay? And they stop there for a reason, because running backs, as we know, generally speaking, don't last very long into their 30s. But he would have lasted longer than Jim Brown, as the top running backs were more likely to play into their 30s in the 90s than they were in the 60s. So they gave him three more years. Marcus Allen, by the way, was the only contemporary of Sanders who played at the same time, who was effective long after turning 33. It's just very unusual. But Sanders, they believe, would not quite have rebounded from the big drop in yards per carry between his 1997 season, which was legendary, 6.1 yards a carry for the Lions, and his more pedestrian final season of 1998, in which he averaged 4.3. His career, and this is the really interesting part, he retired with 15,269 rushing yards, good for third all time, behind obviously Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton. Had he played three more seasons, according to ESPN's analytics, he would have finished with 18,352, or 3 yards short of Emmitt Smith's NFL record of 18,355. I kind of think if he was within 3 yards, he would have come back and played a fourth season as well, even if it's just for a game. His career yards per carry was 5.0, which is tied for fifth all time. It would have dropped to 4.9, which would have been eighth all time. His rushing and receiving touchdowns, Barry Sanders 109. Had he played three more years, it would have been 126 and tied him for 10th all time. Speaking of Jim Brown, the greatest running back of all time, according to, well, most people, Jim Brown, like Barry Sanders, retired at the age of 30. What would he have done had he played three more seasons? Just like Barry Sanders, they went ahead and added three seasons based on his stats and the decline as he aged to see what he would have done at ages 31, 2, and 3. His career rushing yards, 12,312, ninth overall, would have been 15,685, good for third overall. Still wouldn't have caught Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, or Emmitt Smith. Actually, would have caught Payton, beg your pardon. Career yards for running backs, career yards yards per carry, beg your pardon, was 5.2, third all time. It would have dropped as he played into his 30s to 5.0, fifth all time. And rushing TDs, he ran for 106, fifth all time. He would have run for 129 had he played three more years, third all time. So these are just some of them, and I'm not going to go through the rest of them. Some of them are fascinating. Monica Seles is in this. and they look at her career as it finished, and they look at her career as what it would have been according to analytics had she not been stabbed by that psycho fan of Steffi Graf way back in the 1980s. When was it? Or no, 1990, it was 90s, I guess. 91, 2, 3, somewhere in the neighborhood. Monica Seles is there. Bjorn Borg, speaking of tennis, the Swedish star who had all those classic battles with McEnroe and Connors at Wimbledon in the 1980s. Bjorn Borg retired with 11 singles championships, Grand Slam singles titles. Had he decided not to retire at the young age of 26, he would have had at least 16, placing him second behind Roger Federer for all time. So he's on there. Kirby Puckett, Mario Lemieux. He missed parts of several seasons because of back injuries and, of course, Hodgkin's lymphoma. What if he had been able to play? Could he have caught the great one? Magic Johnson, had he not had to quit due to the AIDS or the HIV virus. Sandy Koufax, I mentioned before, but because of injuries. Ted Williams, served in the military during World War II and the Korean War. What about if he had played all of those years he missed? What would that have done to his numbers? It's just fascinating. Find it on, I just really enjoy this kind of part of baseball history. Maybe it kind of makes me old. I don't know. But I just really enjoy the historical aspects of these things. Take a look at it. I've tweeted it. And in fact, I'll put it on our Facebook page, too. On Twitter, it's Sports Radio 106.5. You can find it there. And on Facebook, it's 106.5 The Ticket. But take a look at it when you get home, if you get an opportunity, or pull it up on your phone or your tablet and just read and enjoy it for what it is. All right. Hey, before we go, I promised you that I was going to hook you up with a pair of tickets to the Toledo Symphony Orchestra performing the music of the Rolling Stones. It's on May 21st, so it's coming right up around the corner at Stranahan. If you would like tickets, I will give them to you right now, if you're the 10th caller, a pair of them, to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, caller 10. Those tickets are yours. Good luck to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Mike Miller is coming up next right here. Cavaliers and Hawks later tonight right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Have a good one.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.